Federal workers across the country have lost their jobs. The Department of Government Efficiency says the cuts are part of an effort to eliminate waste and reduce the federal budget. But how much will these cuts actually save? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me to discuss whether DOGE's numbers add up are University of Cincinnati Assistant Professor of Economics Michael Jones and President of the National Treasury Employees Union, Chapter 279, Michael Ottlinger. Thank you both so much for being here today.
You. Glad to be here.
Professor Jones, what do we know about how much money these cuts made by DOGE have actually saved?
Well, actually, I went to the DOGE website this morning to be able to get the most up-to-date information that has been posted. And according to the DOGE website, it says that $65 billion has been saved as a result of the efforts over the last month. And the website contains what they call a wall of receipts, where you can click on each individual case where they say money has been saved. And in fact, this morning there was one in the Cincinnati area for the Bureau of Prisons where you could click on that link and see how much was saved. Although it's just a number and there's very little details provided there.
Well, and some media outlets, including NPR, have reported that the savings claimed by the DOGE wall of receipts don't add up if you really understand how government contracts work. Is there a discrepancy between what DOGE has put out there and what these media outlets have found when they dig into these contracts and really analyze the information?
There has been. There have been mistakes that have been found to be made a few weeks ago, savings that were posted originally in the billions, but then the website was later updated to just be millions. You also have discussion about what those wall of receipts actually represent. In some cases, they represent blanket purchase agreements. And so these are, in fact, negotiated deals that allow the U.S. government to make purchases in the future at certain prices. And so when those deals or contracts have been canceled, it's really representing future potential spend and not actual spending. And so there is a debate about what that actually $65 billion represents. Some have estimated it's only 10% of that, you know, closer to under $10 billion. The truth is it's pretty difficult to know because all of the receipts and the details aren't provided, just more of a summary right now.
Well, and Professor Jones, how complicated is it to cut money from the federal budget? As you said, it's some of these numbers are in there and they're about future expenditures, not current expenditures. This is pretty complicated stuff, isn't it?
It is, but I think it's helpful to keep in mind what the goal is. So the Congressional Budget Office is projecting just under a $2 trillion deficit next year. And so the goal is how much of that $2 trillion can be recovered as a result of some of these programs. And part of it is that we just simply don't know. We don't know. For example, within the military, there was an audit. In fact, over the last 7 years, the military has failed an audit to know how their trillions of dollars in assets has been spent. And so we're kind of reliant, as those in the media or those in the public, we're reliant on what we're seeing on the websites, what we're seeing from official government reports, but we don't have access to those systems.
Michael, could there be unintended consequences that actually cost the government money when cuts like this are made?
Well, you know, to give you an example, drawing on the Office of Research and Development, our building at 26 West Martin Luther King and our other research facilities are equipped with equipment that we bought specifically to accomplish various projects. And those projects are planned over multi-years. Employees have been trained to do those things. There are service contracts. There are reagents. There are long-term plans. So if we don't have the staff to carry on this research, there is going to be a big loss in that investment. And there's going to be a big loss in our support to communities and states and special projects all over the country that totally depend upon EPA.
Now, Michael, I want to ask you this, and because there are plenty of people who would say, look, there's got to be tons of wasteful spending in the federal budget that could be cut. Professor Jones just talked about this huge deficit that we're facing. How would you respond to that if the people are saying, well, something's got to give?
Well, and we have an Office of the Inspector General. We have people who look at that sort of thing all the time. We try very hard to reduce waste. We look at our federal footprint. We've reduced a lot of office space in Cincinnati and in Washington, D.C. We do that every place. We're very responsible, though, about the money that we spend for our programs. And I can tell you that the EPA budget is a shoestring compared to the federal budget. And the EPA is called upon to respond to big events every year. One thing every administrator can rely upon is that probably more than one thing is going to happen during their tenure, and they're going to be in the national spotlight, and they're going to be looking it back at these same employees, and they're going to say, please. And they'll be saying thank you very much when they see what they do out in the field. Because one thing about EPA employees when they're called on in this situation is you ask them why you do it. And they'll tell you, I want to help people. That's their primary motivation. Those are the people that we're talking about in this conversation.
We're talking about how much money the federal government could save with these DOGE cuts, and we're going to get into cutting federal workers' jobs, too. Do you have personal experience with these cuts? We'd like to hear from you. Call 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Professor Jones, let's talk about federal employees specifically. What do we know about how many federal workers have lost their jobs so far?
Right. There's just over 3 million employees for the federal government. If you take that includes the U.S. Postal Service. If you take out the Postal Service, you're just under 2.5 million employees that work for the federal government. And what that actual number is being cut is really subject to dispute. It's being a lot of it is being tied up in courts. And so we know that, for example, at USA, nearly all of those workers have been terminated, although some of the lawsuits are trying to prevent that from being implemented in other departments of the administration. So the administration can claim one number, but then to the extent that those lawsuits are successful, we don't know the actual impact. But just to give you, again, some perspective on those numbers, there's over about 2.5 million workers, and they represent, of that $2 trillion deficit, they represent about 15% of that. So it's still, even just focusing on compensation and workers, it's not going to close that gap very significantly. Now, what the Trump administration would say is there's the direct effect, there's the direct cost, but it's those workers that do have control over the other trillions of dollars in spending. And there might be a deterrence effect if we eliminate some of the waste, fraud, and abuse, to use their language, then future spending is going to be reduced because workers are going to be much less likely to either commit fraud or commit abuse with those funds.
So you were just talking about federal workers as a percentage of the national deficit. The federal budget itself is enormous. I think it was about $6.8 trillion, and that's trillion with a T, dollars in 2024. So wages and benefits for federal workers would account for a much smaller percentage of that total, right?
Correct. It's about 5-6% depending on the given year.
Okay. Well, Michael, how many federal employees have been terminated from the EPA office in Cincinnati at this point?
You know, I'm not sure, and I don't want to give you a precise figure because we have 8 offices over across the street at EPA. But I can tell you that, for instance, in the Office of Research and Development across the country, there were 230 young scientists and other technical experts who were hired by the agency in their first year, and 65 of them were let go. And, you know, these people come to see me, and these are young faces. They're very excited. They've gotten their degrees. This is their dream job, and they want to come here and work as hard as they can and make a contribution to the country, to clean water, clean air, and an environment that's going to be able to carry on.
What do they tell you when they come to you? How do they feel about what's happened to them?
They feel horrible. You know, at my advanced age, I look at a lot of them, and it's like my children. You know, I look at these bright, young, eager faces, and they're crushed. And, you know, they get word of this through these flippant emails and these flippant, disrespectful, uncaring public statements. And to speak to people that way is so totally unprofessional and totally unacceptable for anybody in government service. And if I had an employee across the street who behaved that way, they'd be disciplined for it. And we're getting this treatment nationally, and it appalls me.
Well, we're going to continue this conversation after a short break, and later in the program, we'll talk with the director of a new documentary about King Records and Cincinnati's musical heritage. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our discussion about the firing of federal workers and how much money that would actually save. My guests are University of Cincinnati Assistant Professor of Economics Michael Jones and President of the National Treasury Employees Union Chapter 279, Michael Ottlinger. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk at wvxu.org. That email address again is talk at wvxu.org. We do have a caller on the line. Hi, Tyra. Thanks so much for calling. What's your question or your comment?
Well, yes, thank you for tackling this discussion. My question to the panelists simply is, I know DOGE is trying to create savings, but have they accounted for the contract of the person that is officiating the savings within those costs?
Are you talking about how much Elon Musk might be getting paid for all this?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I don't know, do we know that, Professor Jones? Is that something you're familiar with?
It's not, but my understanding is he's not receiving compensation in his role. Although I think the caller might be alluding to how his companies may benefit as a result of these cuts, but he himself, personally, I don't believe is receiving any compensation.
Yeah. Thank you very much for that call and that observation, Tyra. Yes, I know that there's been talk about contracts for Tesla and Cybertrucks and all kinds of things, but I'm not sure about specific direct compensation for Elon Musk himself. Before the break, we were talking about the local EPA employees who've lost their jobs as a result of all this. Michael, tell us briefly what kind of work those employees have been doing and what these cuts mean for the efficiency of the local EPA offices.
Well, we're not going to be able to carry out our mission if we can't have the proper number of people, and it's going to hurt us. Now, I'll just give you an example from a couple offices. We have people doing great work in multiple offices across the street, but I'll give you an example from the Office of Water. The Office of Water and the Office of Research and Development get involved when we have an emergent water quality issue in a city or locality someplace in this country. People have no idea that they're involved in testing water quality all the time, experimentally in special setups that have been built out in the field in these localities, and they're there for months. And they're experts on water quality standards and water systems. And the Office of Research and Development, on top of its programmed research, goes out into these situations in the field, and they do research that is necessary for that particular incident for those people in order to advise responders on the ground and advise local, city, and state government how to respond to it, to give them a good scientific foundations for the action that we're taking. So we need this very dynamic kind of interplay between all of our offices to respond adequately to these situations.
Mm-hmm. Professor Jones, we were talking before the break about how federal employees' salaries, wages, and benefits account for a pretty small percentage of the overall federal budget. I think you estimated between 5% and 6%. I've heard other estimates between 4% and 5%. So how much is it really saving the government to cut these jobs?
Yeah, I think it's helpful to think about these savings or proposed cuts in maybe three different buckets. The first is fraud and abuse. And by definition, we don't know how much fraud and abuse has occurred. It's hidden. We have a little bit of insight when the Paycheck Protection Program was implemented. The U.S. Small Business Administration, the Inspector General, found about over $60 billion in fraud that occurred. And part of that was because just massive amounts of money were being pushed out, and it was hard to keep track of that. So we do know fraud's occurring. I think everyone would acknowledge that we want to eliminate that. But it's hidden. We don't know until you get into the details. I think the larger category there is that second, I would say, is waste. And people can discuss whether or not it's productive to, say, eliminate some of the facilities that we have. We know they're not being occupied to the extent they were before COVID. And so the last piece is around priority spending. So the third category I would say is how much is saved is just a shift in priorities. And so the presidential administration has said, for example, we no longer want to support U.S. aid to the extent we did before, or the Department of Education. And that's going to be remains to be seen how much will be cut because of the lawsuits that are being filed.
We got a question from Diane over email. Diane asks, are these employees eligible for unemployment benefits and health care? Michael, what can you tell us about that?
Employees who are terminated are eligible for unemployment insurance, and they have to check with the state for the rules where they are.
Okay. We also have a caller on the line. Felicia, thanks so much for calling. What's your question or your comment?
Oh, thank you for having this discussion. What's not accounted for is the human capital and the knowledge that will be lost regarding this cut and the impact it will have on the efficiency of running the organization when that knowledge is gone. So that's what I most definitely wanted to comment on that, because maybe the money that you're quote-unquote saving, in the end, it will cost you more when you have to rehire, retrain, refigure on those things if you're just using a hatchet instead of a scalpel to really eliminate waste and abuse and excess.
So, thank you, Felicia. I'm going to stop you there just because we're running short on time, but I appreciate that comment. We got an email from Molly who writes, in certain areas of the country, there are now large groups of unemployed people who have been let go from their government jobs. This happened without notice or warning and leaves many of these former employees in desperate financial situations. Necessarily, these people will all be filing for unemployment benefits while they search for other positions. How does the payment of all this unemployment counterbalance the so-called savings? That's a great question. I don't know that we have anybody who can do that math right now, but that leads me to this question, Professor Jones. What are there unintended consequences that could come from these mass firings? I mean, could this make it more difficult to hire federal employees in the future, for example?
It certainly could. If I'm a young person who's thinking about going into the government sector in whatever area, whether it's the EPA or intelligence, this could deter those types of employees from entering. I think to take the other side, what the Trump administration would argue is that those individuals could be rehired and be potentially even more productive in the private sector. And so if those individuals are able to gainfully find employment in the private sector, then they'll be contributing back in terms of taxes and offset any of that potential loss through the unemployment benefits.
Thanks for your call, Felicia. We sure appreciate it and appreciate your observations. Michael, what are your thoughts about that? And we're running out of time, but just briefly, this idea that federal employees could get jobs in the private sector and could use their skills and contribute that way.
Well, that's certainly true because it's a very competitive workforce. But I think that the work they're doing in the agency for the American people is more important. I think they're more valuable where they are. And inflicting this dislocation on people and their families, intentionally telling people that you're going to move them to a different part of the country, and then going to a social event and saying you're doing it to shake them out of their jobs. This kind of malicious intent is unacceptable for somebody in a high office in the federal government. This is just beyond the pale that people could go into public service in leadership positions and state those intentions.
We got an email from Janelle who writes, a family member in D.C. informed us last evening that three of their coworkers were fired last week, but yesterday there were new people doing those jobs in the office. They were told these were private contractors and not to be considered federal employees. What good does it do to eliminate people on the federal payroll just to replace them with private contractors? There's no actual savings. The money is just redefined. Is this happening across the board? Professor Jones, is there any clarity about that in these DOGE receipts, whether some of these savings are being or some of these tasks are being done by private contractors instead?
Yeah, I think as your caller indicated, that is happening, bringing in private contractors. And I think it's helpful just to think about Musk's philosophy when he acquired X or Twitter. He cut the workforce by 80%. I think he would acknowledge it was a hatchet, but then he was going to see where the breakage was, where the loss in productivity, and then start to hire it back. And so I think what you're seeing is he's hiring back somewhat on private sector. If those turn out to be productive or not productive, then there might be a rehiring of those federal employees.
And we have just about 30 seconds if you want to add something, Michael.
Yeah, we hired some employees who had the skills that we needed to work at remote locations. And those people are now being told that they have to relocate themselves and their family in an incredibly short period of time. That is nothing other than a brute force way of forcing them out of their jobs. It's unkind to them and their families.
I've been talking with University of Cincinnati Assistant Professor of Economics, Michael Jones, and President of the National Treasury Employees Union, Chapter 279, Michael Ottlinger. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Up next, we talk with the director of King of the Mall, a new documentary that argues Cincinnati is the real birthplace of rock and roll. This is Cincinnati Edition.